This won't end well for Illinois.
Here's a three. It ended well.
McCourt for the win. In the air. It is up. And it is gone.
Fourth and 16. Pressure comes. Matt Orbebe with the ball in the air. Makes the catch.
Welcome to Oski Talk. I'm Drew Pastorek. Had to show some love to Rihanna. Thought she did a pretty good job Sunday performing at the Super Bowl halftime show. Lots of hits for Rihanna over the years, and she ran through almost all of them on Sunday night. Rude Boy, one of my all-time faves. Umbrella, everyone knows Umbrella. I did not expect to hear Bitch Better Have My Money in the set list. That kind of surprised me. I'm sure there'll be quite a few FCC complaints about that one, but I'm a radio guy. I did top 40 radio, pop radio for like a decade. So, you know, Rihanna, huge during my radio days, certainly. So I thought it was good to see her. She'd been kind of laying low for a while, at least musically. Thought she slayed it. Thought she did a great job during the Super Bowl. Not as much Illinois news to talk about as we thought. Men's basketball won fewer game this week. We'll get into that in just a little bit. And the women's basketball team inching towards history. I feel like every week they're doing something that we haven't seen them do in like 20 years. So definitely got to shower them with some praise and talk about that. Lots of football news within the past week and a special moment in Big Ten history that I wanted to make mention of. And of course, at the end of the episode, I will spotlight the Illini of the week. So let's get to it. As I just alluded to, this is kind of a momentous week in Big Ten history. February 8th, 1896, 127 years ago, the Western Conference of College Athletics was formed. It later turned into the Big Ten, but Illinois, Purdue, Michigan, Northwestern, Wisconsin, Minnesota, and the University of Chicago were the charter members of the Western Conference of College Athletics. IU, Indiana, and Iowa joined in 1899. Michigan left in 1908, but then returned, rejoined the conference in 1917. Ohio State joined in 1912. So when Michigan rejoined, media members started referring to the league as the Big Ten. University of Chicago left in 1946. Michigan State came on board in 1950 to bring it back to 10 teams. And then it remained that way until 1990 when Penn State joined the Big Ten. That made it 11, obviously, but the Big Ten was still the brand name at that time. And then, of course, Nebraska joining in 2011. And 2014, you had Rutgers and Maryland being added to the Big Ten as well. So now 14 teams in the Big Ten, UCLA and USC becoming the 15th and 16th member schools in 2024. So shout out to Jonathan Strachman on Twitter. Illinois grad Jonathan Strachman tweeting that out earlier this week. This is the 127th birthday of the Big Ten Conference. So it was not the Big Ten Conference at that time. Just thought that was kind of cool. A lot of football news on the docket this week as we head into draft season, and you know, the early enrollees will have spring camp here coming up pretty soon. So before we know it, we're going to be head on into football season again, but still a chance to add some pieces through like the transfer portal. And, you know, you're going to get some late signees as you head into, you know, March and April and stuff like that. The Illini did announce the spring game has been set for April 20th. That's a Thursday night. It'll be broadcast live on Big Ten Network, 7:30 p.m. Central Time. You can call it a game, a scrimmage, whatever you want, but always fun to watch that, even if you're not like a football junkie, just so you can kind of familiarize yourself with some of the newer faces. You know, this is around the time where they might be trying out different players at different positions, you know, Isaiah Williams switching from QB to wideout, for example. So you might see some familiar faces in unfamiliar places. You might see different positions, or, you know, see a lot of the incoming players. So always interesting to watch that. So you'll get a chance to do that April 20th on BTN. And you can also look back on Brett Bielema's previous two spring games at thechampagneroom.com. Speaking of Brett Bielema, one of our football writers, Mahir, put together a piece at the Champagne Room grading Bielema's performance through his first two seasons at Illinois. Last week, he did a blind resume comparison, you know, laying out wins and losses, recruiting rankings, things like that, versus some of the other top coaches in the country. And this week, Mahir kind of revealed the results of that blind resume test. Some pretty cool stuff. When you look at Brett Bielema's first 2 years at Illinois, where he stands versus guys like Chip Kelly or Dabo Sweeney, some of the more high-profile coaches in the country, seeing how Brett Bielema stacks up there. So you can read that as well at thechampagneroom.com. And this was announced earlier in the week also. Four Illini have been invited to the NFL Scouting Combine in Indianapolis. It's coming up here in the next few weeks. Three defensive backs, Sidney Brown at the safety spot, and then you have Quan Martin and Devin Witherspoon being invited, and Chase Brown, the Big Ten's leading rusher from a year ago, also invited. Kind of a surprise that Alex Palcheski was not invited. I think he'll end up being drafted probably later rounds, but a little surprised to not see him on that list. But four Illini are invited to Indianapolis. Spoon, the obvious one. A lot of mock drafts have projected him as a first round pick. You know, earlier in the offseason, it was like maybe late 20s. And now I thought it was ESPN, maybe it was a different service, but I've seen Devin Witherspoon go as high as like a top 10 pick in the draft and one of the five or six best players in the draft. Doesn't necessarily translate to draft position, because a lot of teams will go quarterback or wide receiver or pass rusher, you know, as more of areas of need. So he might be the fourth or fifth best player in the draft. He might not go till, you know, 10, 12, 15, something like that. But certainly going to be a first-round pick. Spoon, just to review the statistics from last season, 41 tackles, 3 interceptions, 14 pass breakups. He was a finalist for the Jim Thorpe Award, won the Big Ten's version of that award for the top cornerback in the conference. And Pro Football Focus, if you pay attention to PFF, you know, they have consistently graded Devin Witherspoon as one of their top corners for coverage. So the services, the scouting services, very high on Devin Witherspoon, and you hope that he parlays that into a strong performance in the combine, and then maybe a top 10 pick in the upcoming draft. Illinois has not had a first-round draft pick since 2012. There were actually two of them in that year, Whitney Mercilus and A.J. Jenkins. So all but a certainty that Spoon will be in that company. But Spoon, of course, an early entry into the draft. He decided to forego his final season, or his senior season. So he was not a participant in the Senior Bowl, but Quan Martin, Chase Brown, Sidney Brown, they were participants in that bowl game last week or earlier in February. Jim Nagy, he is the executive director of the Reese's Senior Bowl. He, when speaking about Quan Martin, said that he felt Martin was one of the most versatile DBs in this year's draft. You know, he's got speed, he's got decent size, good hands, you know, with the interceptions, but he's also a pretty adept tackler. Nagy viewed Sidney Brown as a core special teams player at minimum. Said he's not just, he showed that he's not just a box safety. You can't just pitch and hold him as a strong safety. You know, with his ball skills as well, he showed that knack for creating takeaways. You know, who could forget that Northwestern game at the end of the season? Had the fumble return, the scoop and score, and the pick six in the same game. So I think he really showed his skill set there. And I think special teams for sure, with the way he hits and, you know, his vision, I think certainly he could have a future and a bright one on special teams. And then Jim Nagy also referred to Chase Brown as the perfect running back body type. He's compact, he's hard to hit, and he said that Chase Brown's ability to make people miss is pretty special. I'm not a draft guru, obviously. I don't specialize in that, nor do I pretend to. But I think if you're laying out those four guys, and again, I think Paucho will get drafted as well, probably in that late day three range where you saw guys like Allegretti go and Doug Kramer go. I think he's in that mix, you know, sixth, seventh round. But of those four that were invited to the combine, I would say Spoon, obviously, the first one to go out of that group. He'll be the first one drafted. I'd say probably Quan second, then Chase Brown, then Sidney Brown. That's not to say that there's a big gap once you get past Devin Witherspoon. He's obviously going to be a first-round pick unless something catastrophic happens. I'd be shocked to not see him in round one. But I think Chase, Sidney, Quan, they're all going to be in that late day two, early day three range. You know, third, fourth, fifth round, somewhere around there. Teams just don't spend a lot of draft capital on running backs these days. It doesn't mean that Chase isn't going to be a productive running back. There's a lot to like, as Jim Nagy pointed out. He's compact. He's hard to bring down. We've seen that. One of the best when it comes to yards after contact in the entire nation. So I think all of that is going to help him. He might not have the standout stats at the combine as far as, you know, 40-yard dash and all the, like, the agility stuff that they do. He might not have that. I think his vision was another attribute you can't really measure at the combine, but, you know, certainly elite vision and toughness, and you need both of those things certainly to succeed in the NFL. I would suspect Chase Brown in that third, fourth round range. You know, once in a while you get a Zeke Elliott or a Saquon Barkley that go really early in the first round. It's just not really how the NFL does business nowadays. They don't prioritize the running back position when it comes to drafting. And every team has a running back that's, you know, a third round pick, fourth round pick, fifth round pick that they really like, that's really been productive. So I'm not saying that to slight Chase Brown in the least. I'm just, you know, based on recent history in the NFL, I think it's safe to assume Chase Brown would probably be in that third, fourth round sort of window. And then Sidney Brown, again, I think pretty close to where his brother goes. Would love to see him in a Chicago Bears uniform. Either one, honestly. If the Bears are moving on from David Montgomery, I think Chase Brown's a perfect fit for them. And they need some playmakers in the defensive backfield as well. That was a group that showed signs of promise, but also
showed that they need some help. So I think Sidney Brown, with his toughness and his versatility, his ball hawking ability, I think he could find a landing spot in Chicago as well. Wishful thinking, at least for me. So best of luck to Chase and Sidney Brown, Devin Witherspoon, and Quan Martin as their pro journeys continue, starting with the NFL Combine here in a couple weeks. Now moving on to basketball. Let's start with the women. Shauna Green's team had a busy week. Started on Thursday in Lincoln. The Fighting Illini found a way to win 72-64 over the Cornhuskers. Nebraska, not one of the top teams in the Big Ten, but Illinois really struggled for a large portion of this game. Particularly on the road, Illinois has struggled lately, and it looked like that trend was going to continue. Illinois was shooting poorly in this game. Genesis Bryant left with an injury after playing just 10 minutes. So a short-handed Illinois team trailing late in the third quarter by 10. And as our Noah Cowell put it in his post-game recap, Illinois did not just flip the switch. They broke it into a million pieces. A 20-0 run by Illinois. They outscored the Huskers 20-0 to punctuate the comeback and put the game away. They took the lead from there. They kept it from there. Nebraska shot just 5 of 25 in the second half, 20%. Meanwhile, the Illini hit 16 of their 31 shot attempts in the second half to really turn the tide. In the final 11 minutes of game time, Illinois made 12 of its last 18 shots, and Nebraska made just one of its final 11. So Illinois closed out the game after getting that big comeback. Makaira Cook, 22 points to lead the Illini. Kendall Bostic, yet another double-double, 11 points and 10 boards. It's her ninth double-double this season. Adalia McKenzie finished with 16 points and 7 rebounds. But a really gutsy performance. You know, Jen Bryant had been either the first scoring option or second scoring option for Illinois in most of their games this season. So to win without one of their top stars is a testament to this program and that they have what it takes to hang in the Big Ten. So really a nice effort, a tremendous comeback win for the Illini, which set up a big matchup on Sunday afternoon. Another road tilt, this time against the Maryland Terrapins. And the Illini got off to a very good start in this one as well. They were tasting the upset. They led by 9 at the half, but the third quarter, things drastically changed. Maryland made their move in that third quarter, outscoring the Illini 31-9. Illinois also committed 10 turnovers in that third quarter. A sloppy second half for the Fighting Illini. As our Ethan Parker pointed out in his post-game recap at the Champagne Room, Illinois started off the game very, very hot. Three-point shooting had been an issue lately, but it was not the case on Sunday. Illinois started 5 for 5 from deep, hit 12 three-pointers in this game. Maryland goes on this 13-0 run to close out the third quarter, and that was pretty much it. Illinois couldn't muster up enough to come back and recover. Genesis Bryant was not in this game. I just mentioned the injury a bit ago. Thursday night, was not able to compete on Sunday. Makaira Cook had 29 points for Illinois on 11 of 23 shooting. She hit 4 of 9 of her threes, had 6 rebounds, but 9 turnovers. Illinois had 25 on the afternoon. Makaira Cook with 9 of those. Although she did score her 1,000th career point during the game. Jada Peebles, in the stead of Genesis Bryant, was terrific. 17 points total, 5 of 9 from 3. Played 32 minutes off the bench. The three-point shooting, as I said, was very bizarre. Because here Maryland is ripping off this big run, outscoring Illinois 31-9 in the third quarter. But the Terps did not make a three in this game. Illinois 12 of 22, Maryland 0 for 17. But they capitalized on the turnovers. Maryland with 29 points off those Illinois turnovers. Terrapins also 18 of 18 from the free throw line. Diamond Miller was tremendous for the Terps. 31 points, 12 out of 23 from the field, 7 of 7 from the foul line. Also had 9 rebounds and 4 assists. Anyway, Maryland's a top 10 team. They came in number 8. Illinois' signature win this year was against Iowa New Year's Day in Iowa City. Iowa was a top 15 team. Illinois had played well against Ohio State this year, played well against Indiana twice, but could not overcome those teams. So Illinois has definitely made some positive strides. They've improved by leaps and bounds. They've been competitive against the top squads in the Big Ten, but fell short on Sunday, despite a really solid first half. Just too many mistakes, too many sloppy plays in the second half, and Terps dominated in the paint as well. We don't normally see that against Illinois, but Illini giving up 56 points in the paint while scoring just 12 of their own. So a lot of things there. The free throws, you know, Maryland goes a perfect 18 of 18. They score 29 points off turnovers, score 56 paint points. So they were able to overcome their woes from long distance and pull away and get the win 82-71. Nonetheless, Illinois 19-7 overall, 9-6 in the Big Ten. And again, just to go back to Ethan's piece at thechampagneroom.com, Illinois remains at 19 victories, but they're on the verge of a bit of history. Fighting Illini have not won 20 games in a season since 07-08. And that team lost 15 games and got to the women's NIT. So Illinois still solidly in the NCAA tournament mix despite this loss. No one's going to fault them for losing to Maryland. But they've had a couple of these of late. Ohio State, they let a lead slip away. Gave up a big run in the third quarter. Same thing on Sunday afternoon against Maryland. Had a lead at the half. I think Illinois led by 17 against Ohio State and let that one slip away. This time, not as big of a lead. Still a 9-point advantage at the half. Maryland goes on that big run, 31-9 in the third quarter. And that was really the difference maker. But as we've pointed out so often throughout this season, pretty much anything the women's team does is beyond anything we could have expected in November. So Shauna Green's still got this thing moving in a positive direction. 3 games left on their slate. You've got the next 2 at home, Penn State next Sunday, and then Nebraska again on Wednesday, the 22nd. You wrap up the season at Rutgers on February 26th. Those are 3 of the lesser teams in the Big Ten. So no reason to think Illinois can't win all 3. And then they're going to have a decent seed in the Big Ten tournament, still in position to have a bye, which would be very nice. It's easy to get discouraged when you have especially when you're playing a ranked team, when you're on the verge of that upset and you can't complete it. But, and Shauna Greene has just got this program on the right track. Year one, the things she's been able to do, the things that this team has been able to do is just amazing. So unfortunate they didn't get the W, didn't get that road upset against a top 10 team, but three very, very winnable games to close out the season starting next Sunday. So let's get into the men's action. The Illini were scheduled to play the Minnesota Golden Gophers earlier in the week, Monday or Tuesday, I believe. Minnesota had some COVID issues within their program, so the game got postponed, rescheduled for later in the season. So while it gave Illinois an extended respite, last played last Saturday against Iowa, it also provides a scheduling problem here in the next couple weeks. They're going to do a stretch now of four games in 9 days. But Rutgers coming into State Farm Center Saturday afternoon. Darren Williams was in the building. And got to imagine that D. Will liked what he saw on Saturday. Illini come away with a 69-60 victory. Very hard-fought game. Rutgers, one of the best defensive teams, not just in the Big Ten, but in the entire country. Scarlet Knights came in holding opponents to 58.7 points per game. That's the best in the Big Ten, seventh best nationally. Also holding opponents to 38% field goal shooting, which is fourth best nationally. And Rutgers first in the Big Ten in steals per game at 9.3 per contest. So a lot of really good defense on both sides. We know how good Illinois has been. Rutgers statistically was, you know, probably the best team in the Big Ten coming into the game. But early on, there was a lot of buckets being exchanged, a lot of offense on both sides, and thought, oh, this might be a very uncharacteristically high-scoring game, which you think would probably favor Illinois more than Rutgers, because, you know, they use Cliff Amore similarly to how the Illini use Dane Danger and Kofi Coburn. You know, they want to start with the inside game and work their way out. And we saw a lot of that early. Amore got a lot of touches, and Rutgers was getting a ton of offensive rebounds early. At one point, they had a 7-0 edge over Illinois on the offensive glass. Just Illinois not able to box out, not getting in good position to pull down those rebounds. Rutgers was capitalizing, got some decent second chance opportunities. But the game really changed in the second half. And Illinois wound up being the defensive team that shut down the opposition. Some of that was due to fouling, but Illinois goes on this tear. They were down 6 with about 15 minutes to go. Illinois trailed 47-41. They rip off a 19-0 run to grab the lead 60-47. And it was pretty much good night, sweetheart, after that. Rutgers did not score for, I think it was 10 minutes and 1 second. They were 0 for 15 with 4 turnovers in that period. And some of that is really good defense by Illinois, of course. Some of that was just bad luck. They missed some layups. They missed a couple of shots in close. But they weren't even getting free throws. I mean, they did not score at all for a long period of time, 10-plus minutes. Normally, we see that on Illinois' end. Illinois is the team that goes on the prolonged scoring droughts. The other team makes a run, pulls away. Illinois got that big run, and they were able to maintain that advantage throughout the rest of the game. Illinois, Sincere Harris hit the game's first three-point shot. That was very strange. Illinois just keeps on jacking up these threes, and they can't seem to make any of them, yet they continue to take them. That's been a consistent issue. On the day, Illinois was 5 for 20, but they were 4 out of 8 in the second half. So first half, they're 1 for 12. The only three-point bucket was made by Sincere Harris, who's not really known for his offense. We'll get to Sincere Harris more in just a bit. But yeah, 5 out of 20, and you had 17 turnovers as a team, and you still win the game by 9. Outscore the Scarlet Knights 39-26 in the second half. But again, a lot of it came in that 10-minute period. You know, 19 of those points came from about the 15-minute mark to the 5-minute mark in the second half. Mentioned last week the performances of Coleman Hawkins and Terrence Shannon, how it's really hard to expect your team to win regardless of what's going on, even though there was, you know, some foul issues, some free throw stuff that was happening. You can't have two of your primary targets on offense go 3 for 17 and expect to win. Now, that was the main issue Illinois had against Iowa. Hawkins went 0 for 7. TSJ went 3 for 10. Like, you can't have that and expect to consistently win against the better teams in the league. Rutgers ranked in the top 25 coming in, but going back to Hawkins and Shannon, much better, especially Coleman Hawkins, but they combined for 33 points on 12 of 20 shooting. So very efficient, very effective. Coleman Hawkins, this was one of those NBA Coleman games, right? We've seen a lot of bad Coleman where we're like, how can you put this guy on the floor? Today, or Saturday rather, he was probably the best player on the floor. 18 points, 8 of 13. Also put together 8 rebounds and 4 assists. So really a complete game. Again, Hawkins has had a triple-double this season. We've seen the potential that's there. But for every great Coleman Hawkins game, you have 5 that are just head-scratchers. No head-scratching on Saturday. Though he did have that really funny play where he missed the putback dunk and then tried to like grab the ball and put it back in the net. Got a technical for that. So we did have a little bit. We did have a glimpse of some bad Coleman. But overall, very, very impressive. And Shannon did a lot of his damage in the second half. Still only shot 7 times, but finished with 15 points, 5 of 6 from the foul line, and 4 rebounds. So if you're getting that output from those two guys, super, super helpful. Especially on a day where Matt Meyer was struggling. Matt Meyer had 8 points, 8 rebounds, but Matt Meyer did not score until 7:25 left in the game. I think he got a 3-point play. He got a basket and an and one. Those are the first points he had. He didn't score the first 32 and a half minutes of the game and finished with 8. So he was really good down the stretch. Dane Danger, 15 points, 7 boards. That's kind of routine at this point. We were expecting that. You still would like to see more paint touches, but 15 from Shannon, 15 from Danger, 18 from Hawkins, a very well-rounded game. That's what you're going to need later in the year, and as you head into March, you can't rely on just one guy to do stuff. So again, really, the story of the game was told in that 10-minute period between about 15 minutes left to 5 minutes left. I saw this from the Illinois NIL store. They put this on Twitter. Ty Rogers checked in with 15:04 left. Illinois, again, down 6. He exited the game. He checked out with 5:20 left, and Illinois was up 13. So in that period, he was on the floor that entire 10-minute span, and Illinois went on that 19-0 run to really put the game away. Ty Rogers did not score in that time frame. 5 rebounds, 1 block, 1 assist during that span. Did not score. and the Illini were still plus 19. Stephen Bardo, we love to hate Bardo, but he pointed this out during the broadcast on Saturday that he does not have to be an offensive threat to dominate a game. And we're seeing that. You got to give Bardo credit for pointing that out. Ty Rogers, and we've seen this in other games during the season, he has been an igniter. He's been making those energy plays, those hustle plays, going balls to the wall. He's going max effort. If he gets any kind of consistent offensive game, look out, man. He is going to be a problem for a long time. And speaking of that, Sincere Harris, got to give him some love as well. Shout out to Andy Kimball from the Decatur Herald and Review. He tweeted this out. Sincere Harris has played 76 minutes total in Illinois' six games against ranked opponents. In those 76 minutes, the Illini are plus 67. Plus 67. So again, those two guys, Rogers and Harris, aren't offering you much offensively. And it's hard to convince yourself to put them on the floor, but they're so good at what they do that you gotta put them in the game. Maybe you don't have them in at the same time, but that smaller lineup was working for Brad Underwood. So kudos to him for keeping those guys out there, riding the hot hand, so to speak. Even though they weren't scoring the points, they were making a lot of plays. They were doing a lot of really excellent stuff. And that's the stuff that these championship-type teams are made of. You don't need five guys that score 20 points a game. Most teams have, you know, they have one guy who averages 18, 20, 22. You got three or four guys who are in double figures or close to it. And then you have your glue guys, your energy guys, your complementary pieces. No one's arguing that the past five seasons prior to this one that Damonte Williams was an offensive specialist, right? He got better at the three-point shooting as his career went along. He was a guy that you could toss the ball to for a clutch three, and you could expect him to possibly make it. Not going to shy away from getting in the ball. But Damonte was not an offensive player. He was such a force on the defensive side. He played angry. You know, he was intense, in your face, no nonsense, no bullshit. You know, that cliche, the bulldog type. And you cannot underestimate the value of a player like that. No one's saying that he's a core offensive player, but Illinois was certainly a better team for having a guy like Damonte Williams on the floor. Andres Feliz, another one of those bulldog guys that was just a menace. He was a pest. Drove you crazy. He would get you, occasionally he'd have a game where he'd get you, you know, 14, 15. But he was a leader and he was tough. You need guys like that. You need those energy guys that are just always seeming to be in the right place at the right time. That are heady players that have a feel for the game, even if they're not offensively minded. And just, you know, all the stats, you can talk about points, rebounds, blocks, assists, whatever. Plus minus is a very valuable stat. And those guys, Rogers and Harris, are tremendous boosts to the Illini when they're on the court. Like I said, Harris plays 76 minutes against ranked teams, and the Illini are plus 67. Even if they were plus 67 in 100 minutes or 200 minutes, you would take that. He'll be unheralded, like when he leaves. He'll be a guy you won't talk about the same way you talk about a D. Brown or an Io or a Kofi or a Malcolm Hill, but he's going to be one of those key pieces moving forward. If Illinois wants to move on in March, get over that hump, they're going to need guys like Sincere Harris, like Ty Rogers. Love the way those guys play. They bring an attitude. They've embodied that everyday guy's mentality. Brad Underwood had said that in the offseason, even and during the season when they were going through that morass after the Penn State loss, you know, that infamous press conference. Brad Underwood mentioned there's one guy that's brought it every single day, brings it in practice and keeps it going throughout the game, and that's Sincere Harris. And you see that. He wants it, man. He and Ty Rogers both, if they could both round themselves out offensively, whoo, that's going to be a scary team. Was good to see Luke Goody back as well. Didn't play much, got 5 minutes, did hoist up a three kind of early to be like, yeah, I'm good. See, I'm okay. Put me in, coach. I'm ready to play. So just trying to ease him back in. He's a guy, another important guy. We've been talking about Luke Goody all year. It was like 16 weeks from that injury before he actually got on the court. He injured himself in late October and finally got his first court time. He was dressed for the Iowa game, did not play, finally made his first appearance of the season. So I think you're going to see more of that from Goody in maybe 8, 10, 12 minutes a night just to get his feet wet, just to get him back in the rhythm. It's going to take a little bit to knock off some rust, but it was definitely good to see him back. Illinois needs some depth. That's been the one thing they've lacked really all season. And with Sky Clark gone and Goody being hurt much of the year, it was a very thin bench, a very thin roster. So Goody getting reinserted into the lineup, certainly going to be helpful. Illinois did not have R.J. Melendez on Saturday as well. Coach Underwood said R.J. was suspended for a team rules violation. Don't really know what that is. Don't know if it's going to be a one-game thing, a multiple-game thing. But the Illini did not really miss him. His absence was not noticeable. It did not affect the outcome of the game. So if you can get Melendez back in the fold, Goody back in the rotation, that's two extra guys that you can bring in just to spell other players. Like, I don't know if Coleman Hawkins can go 35, 36 minutes a game. Maybe he can. He played a ton, and Illinois needed him on Saturday. They're going to need him again. But to do that every night, to rely on him, to have to count on him to give you that, that's optimistic, but that's like wish casting. If you can have RJ or Goody in there to just even do the Kofi thing where you sit him, where you sit Coleman for 2 or 3 minutes just to give him a breather, I think that's going to be super helpful. Because there were times where Underwood took out Danger and Coleman was playing the five. But even when they put Danger back in, Coleman was still in there, right? He wasn't getting that break. Now, part of that's because he was playing really well and you don't want to screw with that. But you're getting Goody back in, Melendez back in. Not even saying they have to shoot or score, but just having them on the floor, giving a different element to the team is going to help. Now, if Illinois can get right and get healthy, this is when you want to do it. You got to go into March with more than, you know, 8 guys. You got to have some relief there. So hopefully Goody and Melendez specifically can provide that. But good stuff from Illinois. This also really surprised me. I didn't even think about it. And I dismissed it at first when the FS1 guys brought it up. Illinois had not lost back-to-back games since January of 2022. I was like, that can't be right. That can't be right. They're 0-3 in the Big Ten. But all of those were scattered across a couple of weeks. Now they had the Maryland loss, then the Texas win, then the Penn State loss. Then I think the Alabama A&M game was after Penn State. And then Missouri was in between that game and Bethune-Cookman. And then they had the Northwestern loss. So yeah, they had that weird stretch where they lost like 4 out of 6 or something like that. But none of those games were back-to-back losses. Illinois 7-0 following a defeat this season. Even some of the best teams in the country drop a couple in a row. Illinois has yet to do that, and they will continue that at least for another week. At Penn State next, at Indiana, then you have the makeup game against the Golden Gophers. Penn State is a better team at home, but again, they smashed Illinois in December in Champaign. So that's still going to be etched in Brad Underwood's brain. You know that. And I got to imagine that Terrence Shannon, Matt Meyer, you know, these veterans, you got to think they're going to want to come out and just burn the place down. They're going to want to go to State College and win that game by 100. And Penn State has struggled lately. They're not as good as they looked earlier in the season. So if you win that game and you win against Minnesota, forget about Indiana for a second. If you beat Penn State and beat Minnesota, those are games that you are supposed to win. That gets you to 10 wins in the Big Ten. Then you have Indiana in Bloomington. That game looked a lot more lopsided than it really was. That was just Illinois not being able to buy a shot. Illinois not hitting free throws. There was a lot of stuff that Illinois had. They had some opportunities. I mentioned that in the podcast a couple of weeks ago. Hoosiers left the door open for a comeback, and Illinois just kind of slammed it on themselves. Michigan's not looking very good right now. I hope that Illinois can put the nail in their coffin and just kill their season. I hope that Illinois can do that just for my own personal satisfaction. Ohio State has struggled, already have a win in your pocket against the Buckeyes. And then, you know, you have Purdue at the end of the year at Mackey. That's, at least on paper, the toughest game you've got left. And this was an important win because if you saw the standings coming into Sunday, it was like 2nd through 9th or 2nd through 10th were separated by like a game. So now you've got a game up on Rutgers. You won that tiebreak head-to-head. Illinois could still finish like tied for 3rd in the Big Ten and get like the 8th seed in the tournament. So 7 games left in the regular season. We're down the stretch. And you're going to have this compressed schedule now at Penn State, at Indiana. You have Minnesota at home. I think you got Northwestern sandwiched in there too. So if Illinois can go 12-8, they're looking pretty good. If they go 13-7, that's not too far off from where we thought they'd be at the start of the year. I had them at 15-5, but you know, 13-7, 12-8 was certainly a possibility just because of how rugged the Big Ten is. So they're right pretty much where we thought they were going to be. It was a circuitous path to get there, but they're almost where we thought they'd be. It's just about time now to wrap up the show. Before I do that, I want to showcase the Illini of the week. Certainly some viable candidates, plenty of worthy athletes, but I'm going to go a little bit off track here. I'm going with Nick Allegretti, former Illini offensive lineman. He's now part of 2 Super Bowl championship teams. I was drafted by the Kansas City Chiefs in the 7th round in 2019, won a Super Bowl in his rookie season, and then capped off this season Sunday night, late Sunday, with another championship. Gets his 2nd Super Bowl ring as Kansas City defeated the Philadelphia Eagles in a phenomenal Super Bowl
38-35 the final score. But in addition to that, earlier Sunday, Nick's wife, Christina, gave birth to twin girls around 3:30 a.m. Sunday morning. So that's a hell of a day. That in and of itself is worth celebrating. You couple that with a Super Bowl title, the second of your young career, and pretty obvious and no doubter this week, Nick Allegretti, two-time Super Bowl champion and now two-time father, the Illini of the Week. That's going to do it for Oski Talk. Thank you so much for tuning in. As always, if you like what you hear, go to thechampagneroom.com, click the podcast link. You can check out previous episodes of the show. You can also download and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And please make sure to follow The Champagne Room on social media as well, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. We're going to have plenty of Illini content the rest of the way. Basketball season nearing its peak. You know, regular season wrapping up in the next few weeks, but then you have the Big Ten tournament and the NCAA tournament on deck. So lots of great stuff from our gang at the Champagne Room for you to check out every single day. Until next week, I'm Drew Pastorek, ILL.